Welcome to today's Indiana Chamber of Commerce Policy Issue Conference Call, hosted by Ms. Rebecca Patrick. During the presentation, all lines will be in a listen-only mode. If you have a question at any point during today's presentation, please press 01. Again, to ask a question, press 01 at any time. And thank you for your attention. At this time, I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Ms. Rebecca Patrick.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome to our legislative wrap-up policy call. Again, I'm Rebecca Patrick, the Chamber's Vice President of PR and Communications. I'm filling in for my colleague, Tom Schumann. We are joined this morning by your Government Affairs team, Kevin Briniger, Chamber President and CEO, Bill Walsh, Vice President of Taxation and Public Finance, Mike Ripley, our Vice President of Healthcare Policy and Employment Law, and Greg Ellis, our Vice President of Energy and Environmental Policy. We are also happy to have with us two special guests, Senator Jeff Rotz from Richmond and Representative Holly Sullivan of Evansville. Both were instrumental in getting high-priority workforce legislation across the finish line. As a reminder, you can weigh in at any time with questions or comments on any topic by hitting 01 on your phone. Let's get started, and let's start at the end, Kevin. What important bills were caught up in the chaos that was that last day of session?
Yes, there were six bills that had signed conference committee reports. That means they were ready to be voted on, but unfortunately time ran out as negotiations on these bills tended to extend well into the last day of session. Let's see if I can tick them off. There were three tax bills, House Bill 1104, was one of those. It also included some language with regard to annexation that I'll let Bill Walsh talk about. There was our annual revenue update bill that is extremely important, particularly in a year when the federal government, Congress, enacted major tax reform. We need to update our definition of adjusted gross income, which is the starting point for calculating both individual and business tax returns. In Indiana, we're now sort of decoupled, and that needs to be adjusted. There was Senate Bill 242 and Bill, I forget what the content of that was.
That was basically the Department of Revenue cleanup bill, as I generally refer to it.
Yeah. Another tax bill. There was a bill concerning taking over and managing the financially distressed Muncie and Gary School Corporations. There was a bill having to do with setting some guidelines and regulations with regard to testing of autonomous vehicles in Indiana. And then last but not least, by any means, was a bill regarding school safety that would have provided some state funds in a grant form and then also given schools the access to low-interest loans from the state's Common School Fund. I know that was a priority of the governor and many legislators, but the clock ran out, and unfortunately those bills got left on the cutting room floor, and it will be important to see whether the governor determines and legislative leaders determine that those bills are important enough to bring this General Assembly back sometime between now and next January.
I'll keep it with you, Kevin, also open it up to Senator Rotz and Representative Sullivan. Should we have a special session?
Our answer would be yes, in particular and really simply because of the importance of that revenue update bill. Without that, you'll be using the new definitions with all the federal tax reform for adjusted gross income for your federal return, and then you'll pretty much have to start over and use the prior year's definition for your state business income tax return. So you're essentially doing things twice. In the aggregate, that would be very expensive. We've done some back of the envelope estimates and predict that that would be well north of $100 million of tax preparation and tax compliance impact, and a lot of confusion, and that would start almost immediately with quarterly returns due in April. So for that reason alone, and there are obviously five other important bills, we think it's warranted.
Good morning. This is Senator Rotz and Kevin. I couldn't agree anymore. The impact of the bills that were left on the table, they're significant, and we could look at school safety alone, which is one of the bills I was fortunate enough to sponsor in the Senate from the House. And I know it's incredibly important that we Indiana is in fairly good shape when we look across the nation. But as you mentioned, I know it was one of the governor's initiatives, and we were able to allocate some additional funding in multiple ways, and think that's incredibly important as well.
This is Representative Sullivan, and Kevin, I agree with you. The federal coupling and the code there and the cumbersome effect of not passing that bill is substantial and something that we need to consider. I think this all comes back to what is the definition of a short session, too, to try to remind us that truly heavy topics that need to be negotiated up until the last moment, are they topics for a short session? So just that's philosophically where I am as far as getting back to I guess that comes from my industrial engineering background, the process of what a short session is for and what a long session is for. And we got hung up in some of those negotiations there when time ran out. But school safety and the federal tax code are two important issues that if the governor calls us back, I would suspect that those would be the two that we would talk about.
Yeah.
Representative Sullivan, Senator Rotz, from your perspective, what happened on that final day of session? There was seemed to be a bit of a blame game going around. What are your thoughts?
Well, from my perspective, there's enough blame to go around. We could have moved this or moved that or done met a little bit longer, a little bit later, a little bit more. It could have done probably a little bit better overall. And so from my perspective, instead of a finger pointing, I think we all bear some of the blame, if you will. And I can't disagree with Representative Sullivan. The substantive issues take a lot of negotiations. And so specifically like the school safety bill, it was 11:30. So we were 30 minutes out before I got permission to sign the final copy. And so it had to go through both Rules Committee in the Senate and Rules Committee in the House and then hit the floor for a vote. And it just, the flat out, the time didn't allow for it. Could we have done a little better job? The answer is yes. And so that my perspective is, instead of playing the blame game, let's just fix it and go on down the road.
This is Representative Sullivan again, and I agree. I think, nobody in my district elected me to place blame and to play any of those political games, but to get things done. And negotiations that took up the last few minutes, I think the most important thing to convey to constituents and to the state of Indiana is that those that I worked with in the House and the processes that I was involved in there at the last part, we withheld the integrity of the institution, and all those negotiations, like Senator Rotz said, still had to go through the Rules Committee and to be part of a process in which we put in place. It's not supposed to be easy to pass bills. It's supposed to be a little bit cumbersome there in the end so that we can protect the integrity of the institution. And that kind of bit us this time because of the time frame, and that's really what happened. It's just we ran out of time, but we didn't waive any of those rules that took away any of the integrity of the institution. And for that, I'm glad. But these are substantial issues, and I'm sure we'll continue to talk about what needs to happen legislatively versus through the executive office and go from there.
This is Kevin Brenninger. I would agree with both legislators. There were some substantive issues. the legislative process involves discussion, debate, and compromise, and these were weighty issues to come through. You know, in my many years of experience around the State House, I know that there are good, well-intentioned folks serving in both the House and the Senate, both Republican and Democrat, and reasonable people can differ as to what and have thoughts and passions and priorities as to what the content of these bills ought to be, and they try to make their case and negotiate as hard as they can. And in this instance, it appeared that we just had too many important bills that were still under negotiation going in to the last day, and got into a time crunch, because even when agreements are made, you have to have the conference committee report drafted. That takes time. You got to find the four conferees and get their signatures. Has to go through and be approved by the Rules Committee in both the House and Senate, including discussion and debate at that level, and then on the floor of the House and Senate. And that takes time. And we had, in this case, probably too many things hitting the Rules Committee and the floor in the waning hours. And they literally just ran out of time.
And one of those bills that we mentioned earlier was the autonomous vehicles measure that didn't pass. Kevin, Representative Sullivan, how much of a surprise was that bill got caught up there at the end? And where would the issue stand if we were to have a special session?
I'll start. I am not surprised that bill was one of the ones at the end. There were very strong and differing feelings between the House and the governor on one side, or at least the legislators who were involved in this representing the House, and those representing the Senate. There were, I think the governor and the House author thought that there should be certain regulations and oversight if autonomous vehicles were going to be tested in Indiana, and some of the automobile manufacturers and the Senate sponsor of the bill thought that they should be considerably less. And it was a genuine and ended up being a rather spirited point of contention. So it didn't surprise me that this was one of the bills that was still being negotiated at the very end.
This is Representative Sullivan, and being a co-author on that bill and working on that bill all summer in the interim before we got to session, it's just a topic that our constituents don't fully understand at this point, or haven't made up their own mind if they even want autonomous vehicles on their roads. But philosophically, we are trying to get to a point where we would engage that new technology and those manufacturers in a way that Indiana had a seat at the table and the higher ed institutions here in Indiana could be a part of the innovative forefront instead of sitting back and watching other states like Michigan and MIT take those roles. So it was a balancing act of trying to fortify and encourage the conversation with our constituents to make sure they didn't think we were doing something irrational or putting cars on the roads that weren't safe yet, but also meeting with manufacturers and their engineering teams to ensure that we had a seat at the table to go forward into this innovative design and test mode, because bottom line, we're the crossroads of America, and we want to make sure that our roads are used in a way for this testing of a new technology so that we can, as a state, grow our infrastructure and make sure that we have what's needed to sustain this new technology into the future. The emotions, I'm sure they were involved. That happens a lot with policy when you're trying to represent your constituents but work with industry that thinks nothing but the new technology. And also being from my background being in manufacturing and working in an automotive plant most of my professional life, there's a healthy tension within the manufacturer as well between the engineers and what they're ready to put on the road and between the government affairs and what they want the policies to be and what upper management in the manufacturing environment wants their 10, 15, and 20-year plan. So there's a healthy tension there for good reason. There's 22 other states that have some sort of policy in this area. Only 5 of those states are executive orders. The rest of them are some sort of legislation. And the first piece of legislation was passed in 2011. So even though this is new and innovative policy for the state of Indiana, it's not nationally, and we still continue to work on this subject matter. I don't know if it's something that you need to come back to a special session about, but it's definitely something the executive branch, NDOT, and others will have to continue to talk to those manufacturers about and put together where Indiana stands in this arena.
Thank you. Bill, going back to us not passing legislation that would conform with what the new federal tax law put in place, is there anything else you want to add about that and also the Department of Revenue cleanup bills and other tax bills that got caught up there at the end?
Sure. Of course, I share the opinion Kevin outlined in the importance of seeing the revenue update or Senate bill or House Bill 1316, which contained that passed. It really was something of a missed opportunity. Kevin used the numbers of over $100 million in compliance, administrative costs, whether that be calculated through the internal time of people refiguring their taxes or having to do them essentially twice or paying accounting fees. That is not a scientific number, but it's a pretty conservative back of the envelope. We have somewhere in the neighborhood of 50,000 businesses in the state that have over 10 employees. If they have to figure their taxes twice, it's easy enough, I think, to assert that that's a couple thousand dollars in either accounting cost or internal time spent. That's $100 million all by itself. You have another 75,000 smaller businesses that will incur some additional cost, perhaps a lesser number. So the dollar figure in terms of compliance gets pretty big pretty fast. And when I say it's a missed opportunity, certainty is always important to taxpayers. This was a case where a lot of information was being digested quickly in response to the legislative or the federal reform action in D.C. They were taking a look at that in Indiana throughout the course of the session. We got down to some pretty hard looks at the end of the session, worked through how that would be done in Indiana, got it sort of settled in the form of 1316. And we could have sent that, we could have let people know as they're figuring their quarterly estimates, as they're planning and figuring out cash flow issues. That could have all been avoided in Indiana. And as we tend to do, often than not, is take those good advantages and take those opportunities, and it just didn't happen here. So that we think that's a pretty significant thing. The other tax bills that were referenced and caught up in this situation were both what I again refer to as department of, or agency bills. The Department of Revenue and the Department of Local Government Finance spend basically the whole year taking, collecting information and figuring out where there are problems in the system, sort of administratively. They catalog and file those fixes away, put them together in a bill, and then that bill being designed with the intent of making things better administratively for them and their customers or taxpayers. Those two bills, the Senate Bill 242 and House Bill 1104, both were part of the casualties here. 1104 also had another important piece in it that we focused on having, from a tax standpoint, whenever an entity is annexed, particularly perhaps when they don't really desire to be, that has significant tax consequences. And there's existing law that says these waivers that are signed at the point of extending municipal facilities out to these outlying areas, those people have a right to remonstrate against annexations. The existing law says if you waive that right, you know, after 15 years, if it hadn't been exercised, you know, you still have the right to go in and at least kind of protest the remonstrance. We were looking for a provision that had would have application of that existing law to all waivers. So a little bit down in the weeds there, but was also an important piece, and just another piece that did not survive. So I think that kind of covers the tax bill aspect.
Thanks, Bill. Turning our attention to some positives that occurred in the session, and had some priority measures that did pass the legislature. Greg, building short and long-term water infrastructure has been a long-standing goal of the chambers. The task force, water task force bill passed on the last day. Talk about the final outcome of that bill and sort of the next steps.
Sure. There were two versions of this bill. There was one in the House, which was House Bill 1267. There was one in the Senate, which was Senate Bill 361. They both appointed different groups of individuals to form a task force to study the needs of drinking water, wastewater, and stormwater was added in the committee hearing in the House. In the Senate, into the House bill. The Senate bill didn't make it, but the House bill did. It formed the task force. The members of the task force can be appointed by the Senate, a certain number by the Senate, a certain number by the House, and then the governor as well. The original House bill named the chamber specifically. Of course, we would have liked to have had a guaranteed seat at the table, but what ultimately passed, I think it says at least one by the Senate, at least one by the House, at least one by the governor. So there will be a number. There's really no cap on it, so I hope we get a seat at the table. But the task is to study the needs, make recommendations, and then by December 1st, 2018, file a report that goes to the governor and the General Assembly.
Okay. Thanks, Greg. Mike, turn attention to, there were three opioid-related bills that passed the legislature to deal with that epidemic. Can you talk about those?
Sure, Becca. First one was Senate Bill 369. It was by the drug formulary, meaning that historically, and we've talked about this in prior policy, historically health insurance, Medicare, Medicaid have drug formularies, requirements of what you can and can't prescribe that would be reimbursed for. This creates a drug formulary in workers' comp. States have seen implemented drug work formularies in workers' comp have seen two things happen. One, a reduction in prescription costs in the workers' comp arena, and then also specifically related to the opioid issue is a reduction in the opioids that, being prescribed to help those who are injured on the job. The second bill, which was a House bill that was filed and was a drug, it was called the Employee Substance Abuse Drug Treatment Program, died in the House because it had a physical on it, but Representative Davidson brought it back later on and tied it into another House bill. And what it does is establishes best practices for employers when it comes to drug abuse, creates a program that allows for employees to be either rehired or current employees to participate in a drug abuse program, and then give some civil immunity in negligent hiring for employers that want to allow employees to participate in the program. And then the third thing that was done, which we've been following and had put in our legislative agenda, but I don't know that we've talked about it here on our policy call previously, and that was Senator Head's bill that would require continuing education for opioid prescription and opioid abuse for those individuals providers who register for, or apply for and renew their controlled substance registration. And I think all three of these things are, while in and of themselves, are kind of part of that that puzzle putting together to really address is a good movement towards addressing the issues that we've been pushing.
Thanks, Mike. Just as a reminder, you can weigh in at any time with questions or comments. Just hit 01 on your phone. Senator Rotz, you authored both the computer science and employability skills curriculum bills. Could you talk a little bit about, were those bills up?
Sure. Senate Bill 172 was the computer curriculum or computer science bill, and that we certainly viewed as a important piece of legislation for K through 12. Currently in Indiana, we're, depending on which survey you look at, we were somewhere between 40% and 50% of the school districts offer computer science as a class, and nationally somewhere between 40% and 70%. And so looking at Indiana and our ability to compete and prepare students for the workforce, the generations to come, obviously the tech world is moving very fast, and I'm not certain we can even keep up with it, to be honest with you. But nonetheless, it was a beginning measure that the governor was part of his priorities, and so we're looking forward to that bill. It was signed into law, and I think actually the governor's going to sign it this week. I'm not exactly sure on that. But anyway, that was a good bill and preparing our students for the workforce in the coming years. The other bill was the employability skills bill, and that was kind of the brainchild of Dr. Freitas on the school board, or the state school board, and the chamber worked diligently on that as well with myself over the summer, and that bill, I would classify it as maybe a soft skills teaching type curriculum in the classroom, and it might be as simple. In fact, Carol Auslander, the liaison between the state chamber and the General Assembly, she mentioned her husband is a school teacher, and one of the things he does with the students is he likes them to come and shake his hand with a firm handshake and look him in the eye in the morning. And so simple things along those lines, I think we're, you know, as we look at the current workforce and the students as they come out, we're missing some of those soft skills. And so this is certainly a way to help prepare students of what's expected in the workforce. When it comes to employability as well, a part of that bill was the work ethic certificate program that the Department of Workforce Development started several years ago under the Pence administration. And that there are some requirements for grade point average and attendance for students when they begin their high school career and when they finished and graduate. If they meet those metrics, they get a certificate signed by the governor. And so that we're hoping, it's working well in many school districts. We're hoping to gain some marketability for that in the employer world so that when they see a student has performed and got the certificate signed, that it means something. And so I think both bills were incredibly important in the preparation of our students for the workforce.
Kevin, can you add a little bit more about how those would be helpful to employers now and down the road?
Sure. And Senator Rotz mentioned Carol Auslander, who worked on these bills for the chamber. She's not with us this morning because she's on an airplane headed to Washington, D.C. To work on some of her federal relations responsibilities for us. But these were both priority bills for the chamber and things that have been worked on for quite some time, and we're pleased to see that both bills made it across the finish line.
Okay. Representative Sullivan, now let's talk about the broader workforce development legislation. Despite financial... Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You can start, and I'll answer any questions you have.
Yeah, just also wanted to get in there when you answer, despite financial limitations, do we think more could have been done this session, or how happy are we with the final product that we have on those?
Well, for Senate Bill 50 and House Bill 1002, I think we landed in a really good place. It was a lot of work thinking through how do we use the short session in its proper use to lay the foundation for the budget year, and how do we emphasize and take what the employers of the state have been telling us and make enough of a change or lay the foundation of change away from kind of the silo way that we've thought through workforce programs in the past. So last session, we put a bill together that just said we needed to think through and look at all the programs that were currently either at CHE or IEDC or DWD, and look at the monies tagged to each one of those programs, and how do we move forward. And we asked the governor to weigh in and give us his plan as well. When we got that in November, we started putting together House Bill 1002, and I know the Senate, with Senator Eckerty's leadership and Senator Perfect, they put together Senate Bill 50. When it all came down to what passed, Senate Bill 50 was more of the infrastructure change of leadership through the direction of the executive branch as far as his cabinet and what the governor had put together in his workforce development plan that we saw prior to session. And in 1002, the House bill was more of a programmatic changes. And just like Senator Rotz just said, there was a couple programs that were key at DWD, like the he called it the soft skills, I do too, of the certificate, the governor's certificate that was a pilot program at DWD. It seemed to be working well, and we wanted to give it more traction. The same thing was true with a couple of the workforce programs that were at DWD. One of them being Work Indiana, we had already put $10 million into the budget last session for the biennium for Work Indiana, but when we looked at that program, we put the employer last, and that was kind of what we kept hearing from employers, is that we keep putting them last when we create government programs. And so we switched it where we put the employer first, and I think that is a substantial change. We have astronomical numbers when you just look at the data of the number of adults that don't have a high school degree or equivalency. And we've done okay, but as a state, trying to find those individuals and help them to be skill up in so that we can get them a better wage and a better salary for living here in the state of Indiana. But we weren't doing enough to move the needle, and employers can do a much better job. So Work Indiana program, we changed that to put the employer first and to give them the direction to help us move the needle and getting them reimbursed for making that business culture change of hiring somebody that maybe in the past wouldn't have been somebody that you would have hired because the business maybe you had to have a high school degree to get a job. But now you can be hired without a high school degree, and the state will reimburse the employer for putting that individual through an adult education program, and therefore the employer gains, and also the Hoosier has been invested in and will have a higher wage. We also gave more emphasis to the next level jobs training. We continue to hear from employers that the career and technical education students, they want to be able to communicate with them sooner rather than later, so we put in a conduit of communication to those students and employers through that bill. And we also tried to put together a plan which we could continue our work in the budget session by allowing some really good systematic evaluations of all the workforce-related programs by LSA, much in which we do our current tax credits and the study that LSA does, so that we can make some further investments during the budget year or some sunsets during the budget year?
Kevin?
Yeah, and those things relate to House Bill 1002 in particular, and the things that we found positive and were very supportive of this legislation near the end of the session. I think the evaluation of the impact and the effectiveness of the workforce programs is important and will probably be enlightening as we get the results, and will help us and help the General Assembly in particular, you know, determine which programs to keep and enhance and which ones should be allowed to terminate or sunset, to Representative Sullivan's term, because there are always going to be scarce resources, and we need to strive to make sure that we're getting the best return on investment for the resources we put into our workforce programs.
Great. Kevin, there's two other education bills that we've followed quite closely. One is the PATH, House Bill 1426, which contained the single diploma model, and Senate Bill 387, which included differentiated pay increase for teachers that went into STEM or special education fields. Can you talk about the importance of those?
Well, I think both very important. We needed to revamp our diplomas in part to comply with new federal legislation. And we ended up in a place that the chamber would support, which is to move to a single diploma with four distinctions. There would be a general diploma, the Core 40 diploma, and then Core 40s with honors, which is your traditional academic honors diploma.
And it starts at Core 40 with an opt-out.
Yeah, and then the Core 40 with technical corrections. The expected diploma would be a Core 40 diploma or one of the others, and you could only achieve the general diploma if you come in and opt out. So we thought it was important that Core 40 be the baseline, not the general diploma, and that's where we ended up, and that's kind of what we fought for the whole session. And then Senate Bill 387 requires DOE to post content area examinations, pass rates for each post-secondary institution on the DOE's website to make that information available, and in particular provides for differential pay salary increases as part of the bargaining process and for the opportunity for school districts to provide supplemental pay outside of the bargaining agreement for educators in the STEM areas, science, technology, engineering, math, or special education. I have to say this bill has been a long time coming, and it's good to see it pass. I'm almost a little embarrassed to say that when I first came to the chamber, I had education lobbying responsibilities and drafted a similar bill for then-Senator Morris Mills that two or three years in a row passed the House, or excuse me, passed the Senate, but could not pass the House. So this concept goes at least all the way back to 1993, and I'm pleased that it has finally gotten across the finish line here in 2018.
25 years later.
25 years later, exactly.
Bill, I think it was during our last call we talked about the software service bill being in pretty good shape. It obviously passed. Can you just give a brief update on what that bill actually does and who it impacts?
Well, in the simplest terms, it clarifies that when service is provided essentially through or via software, or, you know, for the acronym SaaS here, those transactions will not be taxable in Indiana. There was some lack of clarity on the issue that had developed over the last couple years. The industry folks, a growing industry, you know, in this state in particular, you know, raised concerns about that and identified that we needed to kind of set ourselves apart, send that message to the industry that
that these events are not taxable, and that's exactly what Senate Bill 257 ultimately did. It's a great message to the folks who are thinking about doing this type of business in the state. I think it's there will probably be a signing ceremony in the very near future here. It was the governor's priority, so we're quite pleased to see it transpire that way amongst all the negativity and missed opportunities we're talking about here. That was a kind of a nice, positive aspect of the session.
Definitely. I'll open this up to Representative Sullivan, Senator Rotz, and Kevin, or any of you want to weigh in. What do you think was the most significant piece of legislation that passed, and what was the biggest missed opportunity? Senator Rotz?
Well, from my perspective, obviously, I spend a lot of time in education, so I was pleased with what we got across the table, including Senate Bill 387 and the supplemental pay not being bargainable. That was a big win, I think, for the teachers and the state. And so those were great initiatives. In reference to Representative Sullivan and the autonomous vehicles bill, when I look at Indiana overall and where we stand with a great tax climate and economically poised to be a powerhouse, essentially, in the Midwest, I think the tech world looking at us, and obviously with Amazon looking at us, the autonomous vehicle bill was incredibly important, and I hope we can pull that across the finish line should we go into an extended day here for the General Assembly to meet and bring the issues across the finish line, specifically so that we're showing the world that we want to be on the forefront with the tech industry. And so I'm pleased overall with the way the General Assembly, the bills that we pulled out, and I think we addressed a lot of good things. Even, there was a lot of comment, you know, there's no substantive issue, no big weight on our shoulders. But and I hope Representative Sullivan will agree with me, as well as you folks from the chamber, that overall we tackled some pretty heavy issues. And, you know, at the end of the day, the negotiations came out for the betterment, both for the employers of Indiana, the citizens, and we stand to gain.
Yeah, this is Representative Sullivan, and I agree. There, you know, we had a lot of accomplishments in this session that we should be proud of and that will support employers and constituents. We, you know, we addressed the K-12 funding and in a very bipartisan way, ensured that the students are fully funded in our public schools. We strengthened Indiana's workforce development plans. We made significant steps to continue that work and partner with employers in a more meaningful way in next session. We started chipping away and attacking the opioid epidemic together as a legislature and agencies with the executive branch and our employers. And we spent time increasing government efficiency with streamlining some of the government reporting requirements. So we had a successful session, and I think the momentum is there as we work towards our budget session, which is my favorite session, so I'm already excited to continue to work. And we made significant progress in putting together a honestly balanced budget next year as well.
I would agree that there are a number of important and positive things that got accomplished, but I would also observe from the chamber's perspective that there were a lot of missed opportunities, starting with the six bills that didn't pass on the last night. And then beyond that, you know, beginning to reform and reduce township government was a bill that got out of committee, was a priority for the House Republican Caucus, and then got yanked from the calendar. Our smoking initiatives from the Alliance for Healthier Indiana, we had a bill that would join a number of other states who have raised the legal smoking age to 21.
which is important because the vast majority of people who smoke throughout their lifetimes start smoking before age 21, and that would help with those efforts. And then the failure to hear and vote on and move a work share bill in the unemployment insurance area, which just makes no sense to us that bill cannot get support. It would give employers during a recession when they need to reduce their workforce an option other than totally laying people off and disrupting their lives and losing the talent and the training that they've put into those individuals by allowing the employers to instead reduce hours, allow those employees to earn partial unemployment insurance benefits. Wouldn't completely make them whole, but they would keep their benefits and work a reduced schedule with reduced compensation, but some supplementation from the UI system, and they would be far better off than being laid off entirely. 28 other states have this legislation on the books and have this option for employers, but we can't seem to get the job done here in Indiana. So those are some things that I think, in addition to the good, positive things that the two legislators have outlined, that we saw as significant missed opportunities this session.
Representative Sullivan, two of those that Kevin mentioned, the township reform measures and raising the smoking age, both were over in the House when they met their demise. Can you just talk a little bit about maybe where you see if there's chance for those moving forward next session when there's the budget session, a longer period of time for those sort of to be vetted?
I think that's exactly right, that you said it's just needed a longer time for vetting. I don't know, maybe they still don't make it out. I can't predict the future, but I can say that that's exactly what they were missing this time, and our caucus wasn't comfortable making those decisions. So I think a longer period of time and using the interim to educate caucus members, colleagues across the hallway in the Senate, as well as constituents, will help in both of those efforts.
And I would, Kevin, I would agree with that, and that's certainly what we intend to do, is sort of spread the word as to the importance of this, because two of those bills, or one in particular, passed the Public Health Committee unanimously. We've got them educated and supported, but we need to work on the rest of the House members as well as the Senate.
Yeah. I know we just go ahead.
I was just going to say, Senator Ott, again, and I agree as well. I think even the township consolidation, there was a lot of concern about how we deal with the difference in tax levies between townships and the survival of volunteer fire departments, which are critical to us. And so there, agree with both Kevin and Representative Sullivan. There needed to be a lot more vetting for us to feel comfortable addressing that issue and doing it appropriately for the betterment of everybody. So I agree wholeheartedly. Let's hope that it doesn't take 25 years, Kevin.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that's not the case, because I don't think I'll be around the State House at that time. I'll just hope to be somewhere above ground.
Yeah, above ground. While we just finished the session, or believe we just finished the session, I want to take a minute or two just to look ahead. Have you even thought about the 2019 session? Any priorities you may have?
Or the 2018 interim, even.
Yes, exactly.
After that session.
Senator Ross, Representative Sullivan.
Go ahead, Representative Sullivan. I'll share at the end.
Well, I already mentioned that, the interim and getting ready for this next budget session is my favorite part of my roles there with Ways and Means, and my other committee is Roads and Transportation. But I also get the pleasure of being the chair of higher ed. So this interim for me will be working with all the presidents of our higher ed institutions and their budgeteers to look towards the changes in which we've just made to Indiana's performance funding formula and moving forward to make sure that we are equipping institutions to educate more Hoosiers and align that with what our employers are expecting of us when we use those tax dollars. So that's going to be a lot of my emphasis here in the next few months.
So I have a couple of thoughts. One of the things that I want to focus on is the teachers and how we prepare them in higher ed and get them out the door passing the licensure exam. And so that's one of the things that we're going to take a look at. We started this session, but it needs a little bit more in-depth look, I believe, anyway. The second thing that I'm going to start on here, and I actually already have for next year and will again this next week, and certainly look forward to the chamber being part of these conversations, and that's looking at how we deliver education and what the tech world has to offer. And so this may be a long-term situation. It might be 5 or 10 years along the way, but moving towards education that looks a little bit different than what we have with the tech that's available to us today, as well in the vocational area, integrating programs that would teach students maybe coding or other types of computer science in the vocational area. So those are a couple things that I've, as I said, already began to focus on, and we'll have some high-level meetings with tech folks in the upcoming weeks to begin to look at it for next year already. So I'm excited about those couple of issues.
Well, and Senator Rotz, I think you've touched on something that is a trend for the future, and that is moving towards competency-based education, not just in vocational training, but even in traditional higher education, and moving away from the notion of credit hours and seat time in a classroom. But I think more and more employers are asking for, you know, what can you do, what technology can you operate and are you proficient in? And I think that is a trend that we will see continue to permeate through higher education, and we're seeing some examples of that even with recently with the proposed partnership between Purdue and Kaplan University to offer online programs for not necessarily four-year degrees, but for certificates and to build on to a two-year associate's degree.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kevin. Anybody in the room or Senator Rotz, Representative Sullivan, any final thoughts that you wanted to make, anything we missed that you wanted to mention?
Well, I think just personally I want to say thank you to the Chamber because the partnerships and the support, especially being a member of Ways and Means and the different aspects in which you'll continue to work with us and help educate colleagues. Like you said, you'll be working this interim on different issues. And so I just wanted to say thanks. The partnership in which we have with you is vital, and I appreciate it and enjoy working with you on many different topics. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And certainly echo Representative Sullivan's comments. I thoroughly enjoy working with you all at the Chamber, and your efforts both for the business community and for the people of Indiana, I think, are absolutely critical for the economic well-being of the state, and so we're much appreciative of your efforts.
Well, and this is Kevin. I would say, one, thank you for taking an hour to join us today on the phone, and I would say to our members listening that in Representative Sullivan and Senator Rotz, we have two very strong chamber partners and chamber champions, and we're grateful to you for your service and for your willingness to take on at times some tough issues and difficult assignments. So thank you very much.
And thank you for joining us on this call today. We appreciate it, and we look forward to our members that have called in to participate and listen. We hope to hear you next month. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you all for your attention. This concludes today's conference call. All participants may now disconnect.